All right. This is News Director Larissa Donovan continuing on with the Meet the Candidates series. Joining me in studio today, no stranger to our program, but perhaps as a candidate, it's Erica Bailey Johnson. She's the DFL endorsed candidate for Minnesota House 2B. Welcome to the studios.
Thank you so much. I am really happy to be here, and thanks for the invitation.
Well, you've been with the sustainability office at BSU. That's probably how most people know you. But maybe for those who don't, maybe a little bit more about yourself and your background.
Yeah, perfect. So let me say first, kind of important in this setting to disintroduce myself in Ojibwe, because I'm a Red Lake enrolled band member. So I just want to say Erica Bailey Johnson, Indigenous Kajaga Nashimung, and then Mamengwe, Indigenous Kaz Ojibwe Mung, and then Makwa Ndodem. So I said my English name, which everybody knows, and then my Ojibwe name is Butterfly Woman, and then I'm in the Bear Clan. And then Indibendago's Miswa Gamiwizaga Egening. I'm a member of the Red Lake Band of Ojibwe. So what's maybe like the condensed version of my background is I was born in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. My dad bought Itasca Lumber Company, and I was there for about the first 10 years of my life, and then he bought a bunch of land up in Lake of the Woods County. So our old farmstead, we moved up to 8 miles south of Williams, Minnesota, which is a town of 230 people. So I used to ride the bus for like an hour and 15 minutes to go to Lake of the Woods School, and I graduated from Lake of the Woods High School.
What was your graduating class size?
Oh, my graduating class size was 60 people.
Ooh,
I know, it was big back then.
Not
I know,
bad,
and
yeah.
I think it's a lot smaller now, which is something that I'd like to, you know, like focus on in these efforts for running for office. But also, so I played a lot of sports, you know, stayed out of trouble being in 4-H and playing softball and doing all those kinds of things. And then I ultimately went to school at University of Minnesota Morris after high school, and I played college volleyball, and I also was a biology major, and I got a teaching licensure. And I also met my husband. So I did those things.
All at once.
Yeah. And then from there, my husband and I, right out of college, we went and taught internationally for 5 years. So we taught science in Mexico, Tampico, Mexico, for 2 years. And then from there, we went to Kuwait for 3 years in the Middle East. And I taught seventh grade science there. And that's where I really had like one unit of environmental, like an environmental unit that I taught. And that's where I found like what I was really like passionate about and what I knew a lot about that like a lot of other people didn't. So I decided to come back to school then. I had my first son at that time. So we came carted back to Bemidji from northern Minnesota. I love this area, really passionate about the rural spaces and places that, you know, are around us and the lakes and the trees. So came back here with my son was 6 months old, and then started the grad program at Bemidji State University in environmental. And I focused on environmental education, started teaching a class, started having the sustainability work on campus. And I was really fortunate to get that sustainability director role that I've had for the past about 15 years now. And and so I feel like it's a really good time for me and my family. My son has now graduated from high school, and he's off at college in his first year. And my younger son is a sophomore at Bemidji High School. And we're running around with the soccer team. And yeah, we were running around with Vocomotive last year, and we're going to miss that because my son actually has made a volleyball team this year that we're going to be going down to the cities and having him he's wanting to do that too. So we're committed to that. But yeah, putting my hat into the ring for this candidacy, and really excited to see the process and to see, you know, the impact that I could have.
So, you wanted to run for this race, you know, for impact, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So as with your background in environmentalism, I'd like to ask you a couple of questions. Mining is a big topic of concern mm-hmm. for water quality, but, you know, mm-hmm. that some of that stuff that they're looking to mine in Minnesota is really essential for the transition from fossil fuels to more electric vehicles mm-hmm. with that lithium, nickel. I'm no scientist,
yeah.
So I'm not going to attempt to explain. But so I'll let you, what are your thoughts about, you know, how can Minnesota move forward in mining and still, you know, hold on to its environmental values?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I don't think there's an easy answer with a lot of these things. So I just want to be clear about that. There's lots of different, like, values and lots of different outcomes that we have to investigate with mining, particularly in the Boundary Waters watershed. I had written a letter to the editor for the Duluth paper quite a few years ago, and I still feel the same way about it. And one of my comments at that time was that until we can get our waste stream and our consumer culture more under control, I would rather see us focusing on that rather than harvesting raw materials. So what I mean by that is that a lot of our like phones, people get a new phone every year, every few months, and where does that old phone go? You know, where do the parts and the pieces of all these things that we dispose of go? And are we being responsible? I know at the time, a lot of it was just being sent overseas and not really dealt with responsibly. So I feel like until we can figure out that closing that loop on what we already have in our system, I think that would be really good. And then along with that is I would love to see the system of planned obsolescence addressed. So right now it's sort of like you get a computer, right? And then sure enough, like in a few years, it's not like it's kind of made to not be good. And, you know, it's made to like get old and you have to get a new one. Like same with our phones. So that system where they used to back in like the 50s make things that would last a long, long time. They don't, you know, we don't really do that anymore. So trying to look at those systems, really figure out how we can do better, and then try to, you know, minimize the harvesting of raw materials. And then obviously, like for myself, I think what's really key is that I do have, like my husband and I have two electric vehicles. So we have a 2013 Nissan Leaf that I've had for 8 years now. And we also have a 2020 Chevy Bolt, which is all electric. And a lot of people comment on the rare earth metals that are used in the production of the battery. And with that, I just have a couple quick comments. One of them is that the production of an electric vehicle is more carbon intensive and energy intensive than a non-electric vehicle. So that's interesting. So the production, because of the batteries. But once you drive it and like the end use of the vehicle, it just blows the other car out of the water. So the whole life like cycle of an electric car is really beneficial over a fossil fuel vehicle. And then the other piece that I've been really looking into is there are a lot, most of those batteries right now, currently, most of the materials is lithium. And there's a lot of conversation coming from, you know, how intensive and bad for the environment is to harvest lithium. But actually, lithium's, most of it's pretty easily obtainable. Like, it's not very intrusive, and it's not like hard rock mining. It's gotten a very different way. And I have even, like, up in Canada, they've been investigating this a lot, and they said that a lot of the like anti kind of battery messaging or narrative that we're getting about our electric cars is coming from the fossil fuel industry. And so I just want to, you know, I want to investigate that more. I want to find some really good sources and try to keep tabs, because I do think that electric vehicles are a good option. I don't think they're a silver bullet that are going to be used forever, but I do think they're a way to curb our climate, curb our climate change like trends that we're seeing right now.
And that is a top of mind concern. I know Governor Walz has a goal to, you know, be carbon neutral by 2030. Is that it? What if elected to the House, what sort of ideas do you have to help make that goal happen?
Oh yeah. You know, it's been really interesting because I honestly haven't talked
yet. 2030 is coming up.
Yeah, there's a lot of people already working like on this. And I've been honestly for the last like few months, I've been trying to kind of get tabs on what all these different groups are, what their different solutions are, and trying to help navigate that. I know electric vehicles, like we said, are a big piece to that. I know curbing electrical, like fossil fuel electrical production is also another big piece.
Yeah.
So we're, you know, there's already a lot in the works. Xcel Energy has a lot of really progressive goals around that. And so there, I know even our local utilities like Otter Tail and Beltrami Electric have been working hard and sometimes even have been leading the country on their own goals as far as wind energy production and renewable energy investments. So those are some things that have been in the works and I think will only continue to accelerate and will only continue to figure out the pieces that might be tricky, you know, like I think that's good. Like we all have to kind of, and I feel like that's one thing that I can do is pull different people in to be like, all right, so this is hard. Like, how do we do that? Like, how do we get past that? Like, what do we do? And I'm going to say I don't know all the answers, but just to like pull the people in that might be able to help help with that. So I think those are some things. One thing locally, and this doesn't maybe directly relate to this, but it has to do with transportation. That's why it popped up into my head. So it's okay to mention
fair,
it.
Yeah.
So transportation with our, it's something I've been talking about a lot as I talk to our communities in our rural district. Our transportation school district funding up here, and I'm really like passionate about it because again I rode a school bus for like over an hour on the way to school, and there is a formula that is a per pupil formula that the state gets to these school districts, and because of our very rural district we end up taking all of our general fund and paying in hundreds of thousands of dollars for transporting students. And so I really think that there needs to be two options: the per pupil, which can stay. Other schools think it's great because they make money off of it, right? They're not going to want to change
it. Little districts with a lot of
kids.
Yes,
exactly. So typically your metro districts. And then, but we also have our large districts with kids really spread out. So if we have a per pupil mile formula is what I'd really like to try to do and figure out. So that's something that I think I could hit the ground running and get going. I know I've been talking to legislators in the past about it and have a good idea of what the barriers were already. So that's something having to do with transportation, local economy, you know, our own schools and trying to uplift that.
So I'm sure you've had a very busy campaign season. I've been seeing your signs all over the place. What are some of the concerns that campaigning, what are some of the issues that the people of 2B have been bringing to your attention?
Oh, my God. So, yeah,
it's the gamut. It's
all over the board. Yesterday we were up in Kellyer, and yeah, I mean, just what's so interesting to me is talking to people from different districts and how different it is here. I mean, every house district was made to have around 43,000 people, right? 43,000 people can be in like a few square miles down in the
right.
cities, in the urban area. But up here, it's giant. I mean, I'm part of seven counties. My largest community is Bagley that has 1,200 people. So it takes us a couple hours to knock on about 10 doors, depending upon, you know, because I like to have good conversations with people. I think it's worth spending my time, and I like to hear what they have to say. And then I know one of our people was in Moorhead helping out, and they did, I think it was 110 doors in 2 hours, you know. So it takes a little more time, but it's awesome. I love it. It's been fun, I have to say, meeting people and taking the time to meet and go down these driveways that are long and like you go to this house and you're like, oh, this is, and their beautiful yard, and oh man, I have more dogs than people, I swear to God. And so issues that have been coming up, let's see. It depends upon the flavor of the news of the day. But at the early stages this summer, we definitely had a lot of Second Amendment comes up quite a bit. We had a lot of the pro-life, pro-choice issue come up, the Dobbs decision come up. We've had a lot of crime and like youth issues kind of come up, which I'm really passionate about that. Education. Even yesterday, I had someone talk about salt on the roads, and it was
the
fun.
Salinity
It's a big one. I know, right? So especially for our, our communities surrounded by all this water. I mean, it doesn't go anywhere, so we don't want oceans.
And the salt is useless below 10 anywhere.
Yeah. So, I'm trying to think. I swear for every person's door that I stop at, I have a totally different conversation with them about what they care about and what they're thinking about. So that has been really fun, and just trying to, take good notes about what people are saying. And I just feel like none of it is out of the question as far as being able to either be a good role model for it or have an impact at the state level, or once you're at the state level, have an impact with the federal level. So, yeah.
Right. And, when I think of, the Minnesota government, the state government, the words that come to mind are like things like gridlock and bickering. Mm. What are your ideas about how you can bridge some of that partisanship that we see so much of, where it appears that our politicians are working for their party, not the people?
Oh, so good. So that is probably one of the main reasons why I wanted to run, honestly. I'm running because I was asked by my community. I asked a lot of people that I really trust to say, no, that's a really dumb idea, or like, go for it. And every single person that I asked said, go for it. Like, we need someone like you right now. So that is probably the reason why, because we are so divided. I grew up in a conservative family, and then I'm running DFL. And I feel like I am kind of a really good blend of a lot of, like, some conservative values and some liberal values. So because of that, I can come in and I can pull people that need to be at the table, people that need to be helping make decisions, can communicate with all types of different people, and just want to help. I want to create a better, healthier community. So let's figure out how to do that. How can we go in and make that happen? So yeah, definitely the partisanship. I want to address that. Like, that is one of the main reasons why I want to run. One of my kind of platform issues that I've been talking about a lot, actually, at the door, I had this conversation probably 50% of the time yesterday, because people are bringing this up too. They're bringing up the partisan divide, the divisiveness in politics.
It doesn't sound very Minnesota nice.
No, and everybody's fed up with it, and they just see it as we're not doing anything. And so one of the things that I had heard about in the last few years is I've heard about ranked choice voting. And so I don't think ranked choice voting is like the perfect solution, but I think it's better than what we do currently, which is we basically have a couple options and we pick one. And ranked choice voting, right now, Maine and Alaska are doing it. And then there's a few county municipal governments that do it. But you would have people on a ballot and you would rank your most favorite candidate to your least favorite. So you'd say, this is my first favorite, second favorite, and third favorite candidate. And then what happens is it gives that kind of moderate or third party candidate a much better chance of winning an election, because they might not be people's first choice because of the division, mm-hmm. but they might be a lot of people's second choice. And so then when all those numbers are added up, they see how many first place votes people have, and then they add up the second place votes. And then once somebody gets to 50%, then they win the election. And so it's kind of a cool, really cool way to have a less divisive government. I think to even have more of the candidate process right now, where there's a lot of attack ads and different things like that. I think that would even mellow out a little bit if we had more something like ranked choice voting. So I've been talking a lot about it and trying to educate folks on what that might look like.
All right. Well, we've just about used all our time today. Are there any other issues that you'd like to bring up, or thoughts about your campaign, or anything else about you you'd like to share before we let you go today?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I would love to. Is it okay to share my like website and stuff? Okay. Yeah. So I just want to make sure I'm not breaking any rules. So I would love, we have a really great website. I've got an awesome team that's been helping with all of this. So I just want to just give them, you know, a shout out. And if you want to become involved in our campaign, so it's Erica, E-R-I-K-A 4 F-O-R-M-N house.com. And if you start there, then you can get connected to everything else. So you can get connected with Instagram, Facebook, ways to help out, ways to donate. And it's a lot of work, you know, it's a lot of work, effort, time, and money to run for a office. So we'd really encourage you to help out. We're in the final stretch here. And we would also like to encourage you, in-person voting is November 8th. That's where like we typically remember that date and we go into our polling places. But voting has started. So people can go now. It started on Friday. And you can go to your county seat, I think it is, and you can, and you're able to vote early voting. So just want to encourage everybody to please, you know, take that step, become educated on your candidates, and then make that effort to get out to the polls and vote.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming in to join us today. Erica Bailey Johnson from Minnesota House 2B.